Hey, it's John Lee Dumas of EO Fire, and it's The Entrepreneurial You, the show for dedicated and passionate Caribbean entrepreneurs seeking daily inspiration, brought to you by author, speaker, and award-winning entrepreneur, Henneka Watkus Porter. You must be prepared to ignite.
All right. It is time for another episode of The Entrepreneurial You is coming at you right here, right now. I am your host, Henneka Watkus Porter. I have been doing this show for over 300 weeks now. Go figure. Yes, that's the brilliance of consistency. You keep going. You start at one, you keep going, then you will get to 305, right? So welcome back to you for those who have been listening over and again. So last week I spoke with Irina Podunai, and she is a SaaS founder, that's software as a service founder, and a business consultant specializing in operations and processes optimization. We did a nice little chat. We shared her experience running a fulfillment center out of China, where she lived for 2 years. And this week, I'm really excited about talking with the distinguished professor of entrepreneurship and chief entrepreneurship officer at Ball State University. Of course, before I start the conversation with him, I have to thank the Jamaica Stock Exchange, who continuously support the show from the day one, the very get-go. So they're like my ride or die, right? So here's a word from the JSC, and after that, I will introduce my guest and get our conversation on the go.
We needed to raise capital, but our experience with local financial institutions was that they were cautious and slow to act, and interest rates were far too high. We had real concerns about financing our business through outside equity investors and the possibility of interference. Could we get a fair valuation for our business? We had our own ideas about the business and its value. Should I go the traditional route of bank financing, or should I try the Jamaica Stock Exchange? So we made a call and experienced transformation of our business through conversations. I'm John Mahfood, CEO of Jamaican Teas, and we're listed on the Jamaica Stock Exchange.
Give us a call today at 876-967-3271 to begin your transformation through conversation. We want to see your company listed on the Jamaica Stock Exchange.
So my guest on episode 305 of The Entrepreneurial You is Michael Goldsby. Now, Mike is Stoops Distinguished Professor of Entrepreneurship and Chief Entrepreneurship Officer at Ball State University. He co-authors the book Design-Centered Entrepreneurship, and that book provides a research-driven step-by-step approach to creative problem solving. Mike, I'm eager to speak with you. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be on the show, Henneka. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. Now, first and foremost, what do you know, if anything, about the Jamaican culture? And that is your path to this conversation.
Well, I'd have to say that over the last year, I've started learning how to play guitar. So I've taken to trying to learn how to play a little Bob Marley. So that would probably be my connection to your spiritual and musical culture there that I have come to really appreciate and admire.
Yeah, one love. Let's get together and feel all right. I like it a lot. Yeah, you've passed. That's your entry into the conversation.
All right.
So we're going to be talking design-centered entrepreneurship, but let's lay some things on the, you know, attack some things at the foundation. So you are Stoops Distinguished Professor of Entrepreneurship and Chief Entrepreneurship Officer at Ball State University. Kind of break that down a little for us. What does that really mean?
Sure. So I wear a lot of different hats. Like probably,
yeah, and you're not wearing any right now.
I'm not. I'm not.
As in physically, literally, right?
Exactly. But today I'm actually in my institute. I have an institute on the Ball State campus where we provide training and thought leadership and think tank activity. So I'm in my institute today. So today I have my co-director of the Entrepreneurial Leadership Institute and my chief entrepreneurship officer hat on, because this is our outreach. And you're today, right now with you, is part of outreach, getting ideas out there for people to be entrepreneurial and successful. And we are a donor-supported institute. And then tomorrow I'll be going over to the business building and putting my professor hat on and teaching students, and then later having research meetings. So much like you and other entrepreneurs, and I'm an entrepreneurship professor, it just depends on the day which hat I'm wearing or not wearing, and trying to focus on helping more people come up with thriving businesses and dealing with the challenges that come with doing that.
Absolutely. That sounds great. So we're going to start with what is design-centered entrepreneurship, because I'm talking a lot to my audience and that's what we're going to be talking about. But what does that really mean?
Yeah. So entrepreneurship, if you look at the stats, right, we know that some say 7 out of 10 entrepreneurs end up failing in their business. 4 out of 10 don't make it through the first year. And I would contend that one of the reasons for that, and our authors, my co-authors do as well, is that oftentimes people have great ideas, but they don't have a market, or they're doing something wrong in how they run the business. So what design thinking or design-centered entrepreneurship is putting design processes and practices front and center into the entrepreneurship process, so that using design principles and design thinking, you are getting off to a better start with a better design product or service that a customer wants before you invest too many resources.
So intrinsic in entrepreneurship, though, isn't that already a problem-solving initiative, venture, you know? That in and of itself is problem-solving when you decide to go into a product or service that is going to solve a problem, hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. So what we do, part of the design thinking process is really customer-focused and actually having the customer in the process with you. So it's a lot of really understanding the customer really well and then trying to get quick feedback. And here's the key part about design is a big part of it is iteration and reframing. So it's a challenge, right? I'm doing some writing on this right now. I'm working on a book and some research papers where there's a paradox that takes place with all entrepreneurs. And that is, it's the firm belief and perseverance and grit that helps make somebody entrepreneurial, but it's also that same grit, perseverance, and somewhat stubbornness that also leads them to disregarding information that might actually tell them that it's not the right path. So I call it openness to revision. A lot of people are more open to revision, willing to revise their ideas, and others are stubborn. And sometimes stubbornness works, but the stats show that probably stubbornness gets more people into problems. And however, that stubbornness is what keeps somebody going. So we do get successes. People eventually get there, but it's kind of a shotgun approach that happens in our economy. So what we do is we say, look, design thinking is a process that if more people were using it, maybe would better their odds of being successful in the marketplace and not have so many random success and failures that take place.
I think, Mike, you've hit the nail right on the head. Entrepreneurship calls for grit and determination and resilience and being passionate and headstrong and all of that. On the one hand, but like you mentioned, on the other hand, that is exactly what will prevent or can prevent an entrepreneur from moving forward. How do you recognize that, you know, where do you draw the line? Where do you need to stop and say, hey, perhaps my baby's really ugly and I need to consider an alternative. You know what I mean? Giving up that child for adoption. I don't know. You know what I mean? So figuratively speaking, how do you draw that line, that thin line? Where do you draw that line, really?
Yeah, so in creativity, it's well known that there are two, actually three key skills with divergence, where you ideate, brainstorm, and you just withhold judgment. Withholding judgment is another skill. And then making decisions and moving forward. So again, the grit and the perseverance are the people who are good at making decisions and moving forward. I would say that something people need to add, a fourth skill, is a revision skill, where they allow themselves time to stop and reflect, take time to really try to get feedback. And if you're having a hard time doing that yourself, just because of the natural biases, we all have cognitive biases. We all have confirmation bias, which means We accept the information that says we're on the right track. We disregard the information that says we aren't. We've all got sunk cost fallacies where we say, hey, I've already put money in this. I'm not going to let it go to waste. However, that again, that's, you know, throwing good money at, you know, after bad, right? That's a natural biases that we have. And it's those biases that, that move us forward to a certain degree, but do get us into a lot, can get us into big trouble. So I would say the other aspect of that is other people. Now, other people could be a duo, a team, some people on the team who will keep you, maybe be the devil's advocate to keep you in check. So I wrote a book a couple of years ago that was a really good seller about Walt Disney. And the thing about Walt Disney as an entrepreneur is part of the reason, really, I would say one of the main reasons he was successful is his brother Roy was the person who would keep Walt in check. And the team ended up working really well together, building that company. And then the other thing is maybe having mentors, people who you trust, who are experienced, who will at least let you think about what you're doing. So I would say at the end of all this, what we hope that you get to, whether you're still stubborn and move forward, you're getting to an informed decision. It's not just intuition, not just gut. It's not just your spirit telling you that this thing is going to work, but you're also backing it with evidence-based thinking to where you go, at least I tested this. If you still want to move forward, fine, but at least it is, an informed decision, not just sheerly your entrepreneurial spirit.
Mm-hmm. And that's you said something that's very profound. It's a concept I learned about when I was in procurement, right? Don't throw good money after bad money. And I believe that is one of the main reasons why, you know, purses like, oh my gosh, I've already invested so much into this. I cannot allow it for it to go down the drain. But you're sinking yourself further and further if you're not able to, you know, make that informed decision that you alluded to, Mike. So Diana over on LinkedIn just said, agreed, you know, to what you said earlier. So clearly she, hey, Diana, thank you for joining us. Right. So you've already begun, Mike, to talk about perhaps some stages, you know, those distinct phases and stuff of the innovation process. And it is indeed a process, you know, when you're in your business, when you're working in your business and so headstrong in it, you don't really see straight and clearly to work on your business. And that is what I believe the stages of innovation can help us with. So I want you to share some of those with us, those distinct stages that an entrepreneur ought to go through.
Sure. So, I mean, we do get that idea that, you know, wakes us up at night or gnaws at us to where we finally feel we have to build this business. And that's just the first step. And then we think it's good to do what we call fact finding, to where you ask questions to just explore it a little more before you invest too many resources. So we would ask questions like, so there's this customer problem you're trying to solve. What do you know about that problem? Or what do you not know about this problem, but you'd like to find out? If the problem were solved, what would you or customers have that you don't have now? What have others already thought of or tried? You got to really make sure that you're aware of what's already out there. So as a professor, students will have what they think is a really neat idea. And I can go on YouTube or Google and find about 10 websites, you know, or examples saying people are already doing this. So what's going to be your twist? So finding out what's already out there. And then the other question I really like, and it's one that gets people thinking, is what are you assuming that may or may not be true? Are you making any assumptions? That's a big one. It's amazing what comes out. So you make this list, and when you diverge, you write them all down. You can see behind me, I have a lot of whiteboard space. You know, you write it down on a whiteboard, you write it down on paper. And then once you get all those down, you go, okay, which of these should we think more about? And from those key statements, we go to the next stage, which we call problem definition. So we start with that original problem, but is there something we've uncovered that maybe we can reframe it in a new way? And the phrasing we use that Dr. Bassiter, Min Bassiter, the co-author on the book, Min is well known for developing and popularizing the phrase, how might we or how might I? I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but like IDEO, the top design firm, Google, Microsoft, they use the phrase every day. How might we? And so Dr. Bassiter was the one. There's a lot of videos out there about his development of this phrase, but it you can see the phrasing, how might isn't how should. It's not how can, it's how might, just open-ended, how might we? And then we just rephrase it and look for all these different new angles. And I'm telling you, it's taken a little time to rephrase and get that new angle on the problem or the solution where the real insights come, because chances are, there's actually research on this, for any idea that you come up with, you know, spur of the moment, and you think, hey, I'm going to start a business on this, research has shown that there's at least seven other people out there thinking of the same idea. So it's slowing down, rethinking it, exploring a little bit more, talking to people more, reframing, that might give you that different angle over the other seven people who are thinking about the same darn idea you are.
Because there's absolutely nothing new under the sun, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we live in a, kind of a zeitgeist, right? We're broadcasting now, but you know, we're entrepreneurship people. We probably read a lot of the same things. We are in a global market, you know, we're exposed to things. And so we got a lot of the shared knowledge, we're shared sources. And then the combination of those things, chances are, just by sheer probability, people are going to come up with a lot of the same ideas. It's that different angle, or it's that root problem that others are overlooking, that you go, look, if you know, if we do that really well, other people aren't doing that well, but if we do it well, maybe we'll be really popular with people. I mean, just like yourself, Hanneke, you know, you're on show, what, 305 now?
Yes.
About 5 years worth of shows.
Yes.
You found something out with your show. There's a million podcasters, but you're in that probably rare 0.1% that are still broadcasting. You found something.
Yeah. Thank you. And it's called, you know, it's just sticking to it and ensuring that every single day I show up, even when I don't feel like it. And that's part and parcel of entrepreneurship. And part of showing up is identifying the problem, because part of the stage that you mentioned, that distinct stage, Mike, is tackling that problem. And we know at times it is often more challenging to define the problem than it is to tackle, you know, the problem and get a solution. So just talk to us about why do you think that is? Why do you think it's more at times challenging to really nail down this challenge, the problem?
Yeah, because takes a lot of thinking. It takes a lot of patience. Sometimes you have to live with it for a while. You have to make a few mistakes. Ideally, you're making small mistakes before you've put too much in, but you're willing to revise, willing to have those conversations. But, you know, again, that how might we phrase?
And Diana, again, says she loves that. I love it too, Diana. And believe me, it's the first time hearing of it in this context. And I'll be using it. You know, it's not how should or how could, but just talk about the possibilities and being open to exploring different options and ideas. Yes, continue, Mike.
Yeah, totally. It's exactly it. And so once you, and here's the thing about the how might we and the phrasing and the problem, phrasing it into a problem challenge type of statement that you want to answer. You live with that one for a little bit, but then maybe there's a better way of rephrasing it. And then maybe there's a better way of rephrasing it. So you don't have to stick with the first phrase in a how might we. You can work with it and keep getting it. But that's where, when you get that phrasing and you know it, what you're doing is something different. Most people, what they're generating and working with is a solution. And then they're trying to find a customer problem for that solution. But the how might we says, let's really figure out what problem we're trying to solve. Let's figure out what the customer's real problem. We call it the customer's real problem. What's the customer's real problem? Then we can let our mind be exploring and searching for answers to that really well-defined problem. We think that it's not just the first phrasing, how might we, it could be the 10th phrasing, the 12th phrasing, the 100th phrasing, till you go, that's it, that's the real problem. And you know, I'll give you an example. I've done consulting, and oftentimes when I go into, say, a company and they say they have a technology problem and they think the solution is technology. And I will tell you about 95% of the time when they say that it's a technology problem, it usually ends up being a communication problem. There's usually some people problem that people aren't using the technology the way they expect, or there's miscommunication, or people aren't working well together. And what we think is a technology solution actually just ends up being a way to improve human interactions within that company. That's identifying the real problem. I'll give you another example. I was helping a bank one time, and they were saying that their tellers were always going to the manager, taking up their time asking questions. And we come to understand that what was happening was the branch managers were not training the tellers well on how to develop skills and working with customers. So instead of developing those skills, they were always running to the manager for help. And what we changed was, we said, well, how might we turn the branch managers around from being problem solvers to being coaches? How might we make them coaches to develop the problem solving skills of the tellers themselves? And so that was just something that didn't cost anything, but it was a different reframing of the problem. We can do this with customers all the time. What we're trying to offer, were we really trying to solve that problem, or is it something else? So think about the classic example of Ray Kroc and McDonald's. I'm sure you have McDonald's down there in Jamaica. I'm sure you do. Yeah. So Ray Kroc, I mean, what he ended up doing was, how might we standardize the quality of
McDonald's? We had one of the challenge why they had to move is Jamaicans love big things. Uh-huh. And the burgers, they say, were too small. So we no longer have McDonald's. We have Burger King.
McDonald's is gone. Interesting.
McDonald's is gone. The size of the burgers weren't doing well on this market.
Yeah, so they should have reframed that to where, mm-hmm. how might we make burgers that Jamaicans would love? And they would have made bigger burgers, right?
Absolutely.
but I guess the reason it was actually the solution that Ray Kroc came with was, mm-hmm. standardization. So how could he standardize what he thought was a quality burger worldwide? And that standardization, how might we standardize the burger making process, mm-hmm. Was the entire thing that McDonald's was built on, and why it ended up being now probably 100,000 outlets all around the world.
Yeah, the best system and franchising.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's just, but again, Ray Kroc, you know, if you saw the movie The Founder, did you see that movie with Michael?
I think I did. It would have been a long time. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a few years ago. It was really great, though, because you watch him reframe the problem into something that then became a success. And then, you know, he franchised it worldwide. But that, you know, before that, that's not the way it was done. You know, he saw a new way of looking at the hamburger establishment.
Yeah. Let me just take a quick pause there and talk about the Facebook group, The Entrepreneurial You. So my friends, Diana watched it. Yeah. I want you to go join the Entrepreneurial You Facebook group. I really want you, my friends, to run over and look for the Entrepreneurial You on Facebook. Join that group, because I'll be moving over the Facebook aspect of the streaming to the group rather than my profile. All right. So let me move on and continue. Yes, Diana, she watched that movie. She says it's a great movie. Yeah, glad you watched it and can relate. And Diana has to, you have to throw something out for Diana, Mike. She's been so engaging, you know.
It has been. Hey, so Diana, if you'll send me your email address, I'll send you a copy, signed copy of our book, and we'll get a copy out to you if you'll send us your address.
Ah, lovely, 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 lovely. Okay, and I can arrange it for you too. So if you connect with me offline, Diana, we will get it done for you, okay? And I can send it over to Mike directly for you. All right. So good, you know, inspiring conversation going a little more, you know, insightful as it relates to being a design-centered entrepreneur. What are some of those immersive strategies that we need to undertake in order to just dive deep into the problem where the market is concerned? You know, making sure that we're not just creating things that we like and we want, but we're creating something that solves a problem, whether it be a service, whether it be a product.
Once you have a pretty good idea of what the problem might be, or you've got it pretty well refined, it's good then to start thinking about what's been stopping the customer from solving that problem. So why is that a problem? Talking to customers and sharing with them possible rough ideas of what the solution could be. It could be a raw prototype. It could be, you know, really a way that maybe they can just get an idea about what you're trying to do, and getting their feedback, getting feedback again from people who you trust and mentors. And then ideally, you know, even sometimes just providing the low cost, or sometimes even free, if you want to do some user testing, to see how the customer actually uses it and what they think of it. Or do they find it interesting before you go full scale into production? Kind of doing some low cost test runs with it to get their feedback. But then also asking the question, why is this a problem for the customer? Because that might reveal some things as well. So, So you come up with that frame question that you think, okay, I think we've got a good idea of what the problem is. Come up with some solutions, then test those solutions, and then when you start, and I'm sure you did this with your show, you know, as you did more and more shows, the shape of it started to evolve, and then now you're live, and you've got people out there, which is, as you, I think you told me, is a new development for this show.
What you're saying, Mike, is a very simple solution, it would seem, and yet it tends to evade many of us as entrepreneurs, and it's asking questions without jumping to conclusions. This is what the customer want, because I know, I mean, this is what I want. So this is what the customer want. But it's getting to the point of asking those pertinent questions and peeling back the onion several layers as well. It's not just asking one question. When you get to the response to that first question, then you ask other questions to go beyond the response of that question until you go several layers in and you're able to identify, you know, the core of the problem. You come up with your why. You know, I love what Simon Sinek says. People don't really buy what you do or even how you do it. They buy why, you know, and it's the why that is so important. Not just your why, but the why, you know, in it for them. Everybody's tuned into the radio station WIIFM. What's in it for me? Mm-hmm. Right. That's where everybody's tuned in. So answering those questions are ought to be front and center of any entrepreneur's mind, anybody who's contemplating going into entrepreneurship. As you your experience, Mike, in lecturing, from outside of not identifying the problem to solve the problem, what are some of those pitfalls that you've recognized firsthand that these entrepreneurs fall into?
I have seen, and it goes back to the firm belief, you know, something that somebody's always wanted to do. And it's a real, usually a catastrophe when somebody who's very, very knowledgeable is giving some very tough feedback. And, you know, and I actually have students say, you know, it's hard for me to respond or take in the information when it comes across really harshly. And I'm like, well, that's a skill you're going to have to develop, because with, you know, within that, you got to overlook the delivery and actually find the content. Because all of us, my co-authors and I, believe that what you're looking for are those golden nuggets. You know, there could be a, sometimes even like we have some colleagues that we don't necessarily get along with, but we know that if you listen long enough, they oftentimes reveal that one nugget, that golden nugget, that's really useful. And I always coach people. It's like, look, you know, you've got to endure. That's part of the discipline. That's part of the work, is enduring some of the hard stuff, and keep your ears open to where something you haven't thought of before might reveal itself. So the you know, the message may come across harsh, may not be what we want to hear, but being open to that piece of information, because it doesn't take much sometimes. That one or two key insights can be enough to take you to a new place. Like, think, and the other thing about this too, related to your earlier point on the why of Simon Sinek, when you get to that why, I think a lot of entrepreneurs, they get too divergent sometimes. They have too much going on. You know, you want to really figure out, okay, when you figure out what the business is and you're getting that confirmation, you know, we're limited by time, money, and energy, and, you know, our resources, to really driving our resources to the thing that looks like it's working, and to grow those things, you know. And sometimes you got to let some things go that maybe you like, but maybe the customer doesn't.
Mm-hmm. So it's about developing a thick skin, you know. Don't take things personally. It's not you. It's the idea that we're, you know, tearing apart and trying to fix. If you could give us an indication of the percentage, because I know many who study entrepreneurship theoretically, they don't end up going into becoming entrepreneurs after leaving their course of study. So what kind of, in your observation, what kind of a percentage conversion rates are we looking at?
Well, you know, the conversion rate is, if I were saying that, you know, in the classroom, usually it's probably, you know, 10 to 25% that go right out of college and start something out of our classes. But the thing we're doing is we're actually training them for when the opportunity that feels right, just as we said, mm-hmm. we've talked about.
Yeah, people. not necessarily just now, but whenever it feels right. Yeah.
Yeah. And many of my students have gone on and they worked somewhere else, and they've made their contacts and made some money and had some time. But then 4, 5, 10 years later, they branch off and start their own business. And and the research shows that most people start businesses when they're working for someone else. And that, you know, that's actually smart, right?
Yeah. You get that experience and you have the security of, you know, something. You already know what Patrick McGinnis, I don't know if you know, he was the one who coined the term FOMO, fear of missing out. Mm-hmm. And he talks about, he has a book on the 10% entrepreneur, and that's what he advocates for.
As you said, the security. I mean, and then, so the decision ends up being then when my outside job or my outside activity is getting to be more than my steady check, then I've got safe confirmation that this thing might be worth taking the risk and making it full time. And so, you know, I can say that in the entrepreneurship teaching world, there are a lot of professors that maybe work with a student or do other things. And then they go, you know, this school job is taking too much of my time. I got to work on this where there's more opportunity. So what it comes down to, all entrepreneurship is, and we would call it entrepreneurial thinking, and it's why you could do it inside your own company, you know, or somebody else's company, is it's all about opportunity. You know, where are these circumstances that look like there's a chance to get something really good for yourself? And wherever the opportunity is, having the confidence, having feeling like you've got the ability, the skills to give it a shot. And that's kind of that hurdle. A lot of people don't have that confidence. So one of the things that we hope that, I always ask this question when I do an exit interview with my students is, do you feel confident if you had an opportunity you wanted to pursue that you could pursue it? And that's the real test of whether or not we're doing our job as entrepreneurship professors.
Yeah. Awesome sauce. All right. And as we close, Mike, let's talk about, just bring this home, design-centered entrepreneurship, your final thoughts on the topic, and then finally, how might my community get in touch with you to get your book and just to connect with you?
Yeah. So design-centered entrepreneurship, the key thing again there would be if everyone can come away with that idea of patience and letting things develop until you really nail what you think is the best idea. So again, it may not be that first one. It's okay to experiment with it. But when you put your investment in, you want it to be based on a lot of thinking and research. So what design is, it's a process. Mm-hmm. And so we're very much based on that process leads to better outcomes. And so, you know, the example we often give is if you had an assembly line and you just threw the parts on the floor, you're not going to build a very good car. But if you have an assembly line, you have a process in place and you're going to build more cars. And so we offer a process that helps people work through the fuzziness and the ambiguity, the uncertainty that comes in entrepreneurship. And if you use these things, we believe that you will have an easier time getting to that idea to build the business on. And so the book is by we're published with Routledge. You can find it on Amazon or any other major publishing place where you shop. And it came out in 2022. It's Bassiter, Goldsby, and Matthews, Design-Centered Entrepreneurship, second edition. And what we did in this version is we put a lot more focus on examples of people coming up with those solutions, coming up with those ways of reframing problems. So we provide a lot of examples in this version of people that you're probably familiar with or and to get the behind the scenes story on how they did that.
Wow, interesting. Diana, it makes you're making me jealous now. That book is coming to you. All right, no problem. So we thank
I'll send you. A copy too, Hanneke.
Oh, I'm getting it. See, all I had to do was say I was there and I got a copy.
There you go.
Okay. We thank everyone who has tuned in to this great conversation with Mike Goldsby. Mike has just been amazing in his, you know, impartation of knowledge about design-centered entrepreneurship. He's a professor of entrepreneurship, and he's an author, co-author with others with this insightful book, which I'm about to get one to read a copy. Yay! Also, Diana, so happy that you were so engaging, so you were rewarded with a copy of Mike's book as well. And let me just tell you, the full name of the book is Design-Centered Entrepreneurship, right? That's, of course, mm-hmm. That's it. And it really provides a research-driven step-by-step approach to creative problem solving. So really, really, really great. And I'm looking forward to reading that. I'm sure the examples, you know, because success leaves clues is what I love to say. And we don't need to go and reinvent the wheel at all, because it hasn't been there for us. All we need to do is just tweak it to our situation. For me, the question of how might we is very insightful, Mike. Very, very insightful. Like I admit, I never heard it before. you know, in terms of that the context of that. And it makes sense, you know, and you don't come with your predisposed idea of how a problem should be solved, but you consider the options, and that's the important thing. Design-centered entrepreneurship leads to better outcome, right? That process, mm-hmm. It leads to better outcome. It really is that problem-solving approach to entrepreneurship. And with that, it forces you to put systems in place that will autopilot some things, try and test some things. This doesn't work, or maybe this aspect of it works, so let's tweak and wheel and come again, as we say in Jamaica. Have you ever heard that term, Mike?
What is it again?
Wheel and come again.
I have not.
Welcome to Jamrock, okay?
Thank you.
We call Jamaica Jamrock. Welcome to Jamrock. So
awesome.
That's it. So I really thought that this particular episode was insightful. It's informative. Diana says, Mike, she's looking forward to reading her first book for 2023. Go you. Awesome. Yay you.
Thank you. And Diana, I want to know what you think of it after you read it. Please.
Right. And if it's on Amazon, then we certainly leave a review on Amazon. I'm trying to get one of the things we have. I don't know if it's a thing in the US as well too, Mike, that, you know, we read a lot of books. We probably read a lot of books, but getting persons to review, oh my gosh. Oh yeah. My gosh. It's one of the hardest things. So I'm encouraging everyone, you read an author, you believe that, you know, the book gave you value, take a moment and leave a review. It helps a lot. It helps a lot, you know. It's selfish on our part. It really is selfish, myself included, because I'm very guilty. It's selfish on our part when we read somebody's book, we find value and we don't take the time to leave a review, you know. We put hard work into writing. Yes, you paid for it in most instances, but nonetheless, you know, you can just be very clean. They read what don't review. Yes, the review is really what we need, believe me. And thank you, Diana, for being so engaged, and, you know, your final feedback, very insightful and informative session. Yes, and leave a review on the podcast. If you can go into any of the podcast app, Stitcher, Google, wherever you get your podcast, and leave a review on the Entrepreneurial You as well. I totally appreciate it. Okay. I'm going to close out now. And again, thank you, Michael Goldsby, for sharing, coming and sharing your insight. I've already shared what stood out for me. And so I'd love to hear your feedback, my people. What it is that stood out for you? What was that standout moment? Kindly send me a feedback now at henikawatkisporter@gmail.com. or on social media. And remember, I beg, follow this podcast on your favorite podcast app. And you may also connect with me for all things podcasting at henikawatkisporter.com, whether you want the book, my upcoming course, workshop, coaching, whatever. If you just want to connect with me about leadership or about mentorship or coaching, I am your girl. I want to hear from you. You mean a lot to me. I don't take it for granted that you take the time to, you know, honor me by listening, by watching, and I honor you. According to the scriptures is how I close out. Those who sacrifice thank offerings honor me, and to the blameless I will show my salvation. Psalms 50, verse 23. What good